We hear a lot of perspectives on the Mankind podcast. Inclusion of a guest is not an endorsement of their views, and the opinions expressed here do not always represent the mission or values of the Mankind Project USA.
Hey, everybody, this is Mike Patterson, and you're listening to the Mankind Podcast.
Looks like the rain has gone.
G'day, and welcome to the Mankind Podcast, the show where we break the molds of modern manhood to prove that there's more than just one way to be a man. I'm your host, Brandon Clift, and today's episode is all about worthiness. Now ask yourself this question: what does it take to become worthy? Worthy of success, worthy of reward, worthy of a fulfilling life. What does that mean for you? And I want to ask this question to you to get your answer, because greater society has told us that success, reward, and fulfillment generally has to come from hustling, from achievements, letters after your name, going for gold, working your eyeballs out, and doing as much as possible. So that once you have the car, the watch on your wrist, the person on your arm, the house, the 2.2 kids and the white picket fence, yeah, then you're worthy. You see, this is what has left men all over the world incredibly confused as to what they should be seeking in life. And through that pursuit of seeking these things that society has told us, you know, we need to be successful, happy, fulfilled, and rewarded, men feel empty if they haven't met that mark, if they haven't met what is expected of them as men. And so enough about them. Let's talk about you. I want to ask you, do you feel worthy of a successful, rewarding, and fulfilling life? Now, before your head answers yes, let's direct that question to your heart and your gut. Do you feel worthy? Now, whether you're a yes or a no to that question, just know that one of the greatest battles we as people can fight in our lives is the internal battle over whether or not we are worthy. Now, of course, you may have moments like the good days where you feel like abundance is flowing and coming your way, but be honest, there's got to be those days where you wake up thinking, man, like, I'm not going to ask the girl on the date. I'm not going to go for the promotion. I'm not going to speak up right now, even though I feel like I need to speak up, because somewhere deep down, I feel like I'm not enough. Now, in over three decades of transformative men's weekends and thousands of men's circles established all around the world, the Mankind Project has been helping men not only turn the answer to this question into a yes, but also give these men the tools and support to take the necessary actions to make it so. But one of the cool things is, ask the most experienced and tenured facilitators and leaders inside this organization, those that have been here from the beginning, ask them whether or not they have the same battle with the feelings of unworthiness and I'm not good enough, and you'll be humbled to see that they too still have that battle. Enter Mike Patterson. Now, Mike is a co-leader and leader trainer within the Mankind Project with over 100 new warrior trainings. That's our flagship weekend experience that we have for the Mankind Project. He has 100 under his belt. Mike is also a life and leadership coach with his company, Leader Champions. But the reason he is here with us today is to tackle this topic of worthiness. Am I good enough? And all of the shame that plays into all of these stories, because he is an OG in Brené Brown's work around shame resilience. And in this interview, he's going to do a great job in painting a picture, kind of giving us a bird's eye view of why we as men spend so much time conflicted and inflicted by this internal narrative and story that we aren't worthy. Now, if you're listening right now and you're in a place where you feel like you are worthy of all the abundance that this world and this life has to offer, then I encourage you to stick around, because some of the people close to you in your life may not be experiencing the same abundance or the same belief in themselves. And so I believe today's discussion with Mike gives both you and me the tools so that we can better not only help ourselves in the pursuit of greater fulfillment and happiness, but help those around us that we care about. Enjoy. Mike Patterson, welcome to the show, my friend. Tell us a bit about yourself and we'll get underway.
Hey, everybody. I'm Mike Patterson. I live in the Siskiyou Mountains of Southern Oregon. I started a company called Leader Champions where I'm changing the culture of leadership slowly but surely. And what I mean by that is that traditionally leadership has been something used to maintain the status quo, and I'm looking to transform that. I have a podcast called Embrace Growth that I host a weekly podcast looking at personal growth work, and I'm a life and leadership coach. I'm also leader trainer and certified co-leader in the Mankind Project, and Brandon and I have known each other for a couple of years.
And I'm incredibly excited to have you on the show, Mike, because when, especially in these early episodes that we're releasing, it's really important to me that we address some of the most common questions that men present when they get involved in men's work, or they start to ask themselves the questions that a lot of the men who come to us ask. And one of those questions or themes or most common occurrences is men identifying a feeling of not being enough, right? Not feeling worthy. And that's a huge reason for those listening why I wanted Mike to be here, because of the time I've spent with Mike, whether on New Warrior trainings, spending a couple weeks living with him in Southern Oregon when I was doing van life, I judge Mike to be someone who has a really strong grasp on the intricacies of stories that we tell ourselves, you know, these belief systems that we have that generally control our behaviors and how we move through our lives. And a little bit of interesting information, Mike got into shame resilience work and a part of Brené Brown's work before Brené was cool. I'm talking like 2007, is that right?
Yeah, 2007. And then her TED talk went viral in 2010.
Mm. So a real OG on the matter, I would say. And we're going to talk about the links between shame and the I'm not worthy, not good enough story. But first things first, Mike, can you give us a bit of a bird's eye view as to how you see this feeling of unworthiness turn up in men's lives from your experience?
So how I see it or why I believe it's there? What are you asking?
Great question. Both.
Okay. So how I see it show up in men's work, particularly in the Mankind Project, is everything from, if I'm sitting in circle with a man and we're just checking in, and maybe three men check in before he does, and that man has something to share, wants to be seen, heard, feel that sense of belonging, and realizes that he's been talking for more than about 3 minutes. He then apologizes. It's really weird. And I've watched it happen again and again. Like, he's taking up too much time. So that's, and I just throw that out there because that's one great example of that man in that moment thinking that he's not worthy of taking up more time sharing of himself in a group that he showed up to share of himself. So it's so interesting to me. And I see it time and time again. So that's just one example I could give of how I see it, how I experience it in men's work. And where it comes from, what I believe is it ties into our core wounds from way back as far as we can remember, or maybe it's still unconscious for you, whatever growth work path you're on, that we learn from the adults in our life that we're not worthy. And it's not spoken to us in that way, but we've learned
through the behaviors, through the experiences we have as little children, that somehow I'm not important enough to, I'm not worthy of, or I just flat out don't belong. And that if we don't unpack that, it continues to run behaviors in our life, which I'm sure we'll get to.
Mm. And the unpacking process, I think, is the most important part in understanding this. Here's why I agree with you, Mike, on just how prevalent the stuff is. And we'll give some examples of what this this belief of not feeling worthy can look like. I mean, I'm having sat in circles myself in men's circles on a weekly basis for almost 5 years now. You know, unpacking is a huge part of men's work. And basically unpacking is, I behave this way and people around me react this way. I've identified that it may not be a positive thing. So I'm going to go to my men's group and unpack it to understand why I'm behaving this way. So for example, me growing up, I always felt like I had to prove something to everyone around me. I always felt like I had to be seen, the showboat in the middle of the room. And if I wasn't being seen, if I wasn't being validated for that, I inherently didn't feel like I was worthy to be in the room, to be in that place. Now, I, in my mind, thought, oh, that was just how I behaved as a kid. But after getting involved in the work, I realized, no, that has actually turned up in so many areas of my life. Like, I still, to this day, can behave in a way that is fueled by this underlying story of not feeling worthy or not feeling good enough. And to give some examples of what this can look like, and you know, when I found this list, I realized, man, this is more prevalent for me than I thought. So here's some examples for you guys listening of what I'm not worthy can look like in behaviors. Perfectionism, comparison with others, imposter syndrome, isolation, disconnection from others, disconnection from your spiritual source, whether that's your God or whatever that is for you, self-sabotage, and playing small. Find me a person on this planet, Mike, who can't raise their hand to one of those things.
No, I think it ties back into all of our core wound, whatever that core wound is. The core wound has me believing that I'm not worthy. And by not worthy, I'm not worthy of your time. I'm not worthy of your love, your attention, or that I'm just not good enough.
Mm.
You know, when I started doing shame resilience work, what I realized was there was a group of people that felt like they somehow deserved to have things, be it, you know, worthiness, that, well, I don't want to use that word, but there were people that were more resilient to shame than I was. And what I realized was the difference was worthiness, that the idea that I actually deserve something, that I'm worthy of your love, I'm worthy of your attention, hell, I'm worthy of my own love. Once I was able to make that shift, that's what I realized separated the two groups of those that were able to build resilience and those that weren't. And I was in that group that wasn't. But it had to come down to like just shifting the actual belief of I'm worthy or I'm deserving. And I make that sound so trivial and simple here on the podcast as those words roll out of my mouth. But what I want people to know is that was literally the hardest shift that I had to make in that journey, was to just understand within my own being that I was worthy. And it doesn't mean that, like Brandon said, I still don't have those thoughts, feelings, beliefs that still pop into my head, or that I can feel in my body of somehow I'm not worthy. So it still creeps in. It still exists. It just doesn't have the power that it once did.
Mm. And so I want to talk about that kind of shift in power, like the power that it once had over your life. It doesn't have the same power, although it's still
there in varying degrees. Let's go first to identifying it, like really identifying it. We've given some examples. Like you mentioned, certain men in men's group feel like they're taking too much time, so they don't feel worthy of the time that they're taking. Examples like perfectionism, comparison. What can we give the listeners today, a tool perhaps, or just a thought-provoking question to help them investigate if this is happening in their lives, like if this is alive in them right now? I right now don't know what that is, so I'm hoping you can help me.
Well, you know, it's funny because as a professional, when I see something in somebody, I can ask the question. But when we're just riffing here, yeah, because I know that somebody that's a narcissist, you mentioned perfection, but I'll go so far as to say somebody that's a narcissist, narcissism is rooted in shame, and shame has to do with feelings of not worthy. So there's a great identifier. But also, what if you're a person that just apologizes all the time? And I know that if you're not, you at least can probably think of somebody in your life that just all the time, sorry. Like they're apologizing for stuff that they didn't do. They're apologizing for other people that, you know, when I see somebody that just overly apologizes, I'm like, wait, what are you apologizing for? And so again, it ties into this idea of worthiness. So those are just a couple of things that I'm thinking of right now, but I like your list. And those that were on your list all definitely tie into it. So yeah. I was just trying to come up with a couple of others.
Here's an example in my life. I started getting involved in men's work after, you know, a very challenging period of my life. And it was interesting that not long after I got involved in men's work and sitting in circles that I found pretty great success in business. That success led to, you know, having employees and a team and being in the public eye and getting success for our clients, yada, yada, wank, wank. Okay. And so when people ask me like, what drives you? I would talk about all these external things that drove me. Oh, you know, I want these people to feel these results, and I want my team to be able to put food on the table consistently. And this is my vision for the company and yada, yada. So that's what I thought my drive was, this external thing. But after doing the work in my men's circle and the unpacking wasn't an overnight thing. This was weeks and months of asking the same really uncomfortable questions. I was able to get to the bottom of that bucketing process, that unpacking process, to realize what actually was driving me wasn't this sense of positive ascension or acquisition of great things. It was actually me running away from this deep-seated belief that I was not worthy. I was not worthy of success. I was not worthy of love. I was not worthy of being seen. And I realized through that process that belief of I'm not worthy of all of those things began when I was 4 years old. Mm. That seed was planted when I was 4 years old.
Well, you mentioned that you have to prove, right? And so as you're telling this story, yeah, you're just giving examples of all of these things that you had to prove to yourself, to others, et cetera, so that you could then maybe feel worthy.
Yes.
Yeah. No, it's so interesting. And, you know, as a leadership coach and in a very egoless way, I know because I compare, right? If I want to use the words compare, I compare myself to other leadership coaches. And I'm a really good leadership coach. What's hilarious is in this conversation is if somebody from a Fortune 500 company were to say, well, wait a minute, like show me your credentials and, you know, you don't have any letters after your name, and actually start to kind of systematically break me down of why I'm not worthy to lead a Fortune 500 company in leadership training, I actually then start questioning my own worth. I start questioning all of the tools that I've honed and all of the things that I know would bring any company great value and results, I start questioning it within myself. And that's the other really interesting thing for me is even though I study this, I know it, I putting this stuff into practice. And like you said, it keeps coming back. So
it does keep coming back, but I love what you mentioned before. It doesn't have the same power that it used to. Right, it doesn't have the same power, which means, which is a big part of why we're having this conversation, because we're not here. And I hope that if you're listening right now, you weren't looking for a 12-step process and solution to identifying and fixing whatever, you know, worthiness story you might be telling yourself. But to be able to just shine the light on the story, when I could at least shine a light and go, wow, when I was 4 years old and I had this thing happen between me and my sister and her friends, I adopted this belief and that belief has morphed into this story and narrative that has played out in all these areas of my life. Cool. Good to know. It's not like I have to start doing a PhD on myself at that point. It's just like, good. If I can at least identify how it turns up.
Yeah.
Then I can possibly catch it before I do that thing again, before I behave in this way again, before I believe this story again. It's a power transfer, right? It's kind of like the black and the white wolf, the tale of the two wolves, mm-hmm. in a way where, you know, which wolf wins? The one you feed.
Right. No, exactly. My whole journey, just so the listeners know, I wound up doing intense amounts of shame resilience work because I suffered from toxic shame. What the toxic shame was about is I have a learning disability, but I'll go so far as to say I completely believed that I was stupid. And that started because my fifth grade teacher would put so many red marks on my papers that when I would receive a paper back, even though nobody in the room was looking at me as I walked back to my desk, I felt as though the entire class could see how many red marks were on that piece of paper. That's how much shame I had, and that everybody knew that I was stupid. It was all exposed.
So I imagine from there, every different classroom you walked into, regardless of your aptitude for it, that story just followed you into all of it.
Well, not only followed it, but then as an adult, I would have to do, the amount of energy that I expended to try to look smart.
Mm. Yeah.
I we have all these things these days with spell check, et cetera, et cetera. Back before that existed, I hated email. I was so scared to send an email because it was going to have all kinds of misspellings and stuff in it. And I had a little on my desk, a spell check dictionary, but there would be times that I needed to send an email and I didn't have that. And I would write like the simplest, I would just reply like, no, send, you know? It was so much energy that I spent trying to look smart.
Well, I want to hear your process, right? Your process of kind of taking the power away from that story, right? That narrative that you picked up in fifth grade. But first, let's just help us distinguish the difference between toxic shame, as you mentioned before, and just regular shame.
Yeah, so the way I explain it when I teach it is that the same exact incident can happen for two people. And the example I give, because I teach a lot of men's work and men's trainings, is as a man, if I'm wearing a pair of khaki pants and I walk into the bathroom at a public restaurant or a bar and I take a leak, and then as I'm walking back out to join my friends at the table, I look down at my pants and maybe I didn't shake it off as good as I thought I did, right? There's a little dribble there on my pants, which, khaki pants, you can see that a lot better than jeans. So I tell this story and guys, snicker a little bit and they laugh. And I say, can you guys relate, or am I the only guy that's ever done this? And guys giggle and this and that. So toxic shame, the way I describe it is that same incident can happen to me And if I have toxic shame, I will go, oh no, not again. I can't even take a piss and do it right. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And the difference is shame, or I'll call it the embarrassment, right? Embarrassment is just this light, hey, let's laugh, you know?
Mm.
But shame, toxic shame, is everybody in the restaurant knows, they're all looking at me. They all feel this deep thing that I'm feeling. I'm all alone in it, you know? So there's the toxic shame.
Mm.
Same incident.
That's a great example. I also love the example. I think I heard this from you, possibly not, but the, you know, you're in an elevator all alone. And so, you know, instinctually being alone, you got to drop a fart, you let it go. Cool. I'm all alone. Ding, elevator doors open and a crowd of people walk in. You can be embarrassed from that moment. That's kind of like something that you kind of just cop on the chin and go, ah, well, that happened. But a different scenario, ding, elevator door opens and it's Karen from accounting, who you've been in love with for years. Never had the guts to tell her, and she knows what you've done. And that could then, boom, contribute to those stories of, I'm not worthy to ask her out, or, you know, strike out again. So it's open to interpretation, right?
Yeah, all of us know how that feels, right? What that feels like in our body. Or at least I would hope that people know what it feels like, because I know that I don't want to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And I could talk about the limbic system and how it hits us the same as physical pain. But really what it comes down to is when that feeling, whatever that feeling is for you, hits, as humans, we want to get away from it as quick as possible.
Mm.
And there's such amazing learning in that feeling, in those moments, in those triggers. So,
but we want to run away naturally.
Oh my God. More than run away. We want to do anything possible to not feel that.
Yep. So when I say on the playground, get embarrassed for not being popular or anything like that, and then that contributes to high school years and taking bigger risks, trying to be more of a showboat, you know, improve my image, be more out there, more gregarious. Yeah, that was my example of running away from that pain. That was how I was trying to put on this facade, this mask, this image, to tell a completely different story than what that narrative of I'm not worthy was telling me. And so now I would love to hear your process when you have these things pop up.
My process now, or what it was back when it was toxic? What is
give us, yeah. Well, why don't you give us a before and after?
Yeah. So when I was completely toxic around my learning disability, well, first off, I didn't even know I had a learning disability. I didn't find out until I was in college, and I was privileged enough to go to college.
Right.
And my grades didn't allow me to go to college. I actually had to enter college on probation because my parents cared enough and had the resources, not only the money to send me to college, but to find a way that I was going to be able to enter college on probation. So I'm so thankful for the privileges that I have. But I'll take that example. So my freshman year of college, I entered this program with a professor that let me in on probation. And there was a small handful of us kids. And there was a kid lived down the hall from me. The name of the program was called Talent Salvage. And this kid lived down the hall from me in the dorms. And we were just, you know, talking before the first day of classes. And we realized we had a lot of the same classes. And he says to me, and we were in a room full of people, he says, hey, are you in Talent Salvage? And oh my God, if that wasn't the biggest secret that I didn't want anybody to know.
Mm.
And he just called it out in the room. Now, nobody in the room knew what the hell Talent Salvage was, but I had all of this shame of everybody's going to know that I'm stupid, that I entered college on probation, that I actually don't measure up. I'm not worthy to be in college. Yeah. I'm not worthy to have these people as friends. I'm not worthy, you know, on and on and on. So there it is.
Yeah. Case in point, there it is. Mm-hmm. And so what about now? What's the process nowadays?
Well, the process that I've learned in resilience is, because I stand up and speak in front of a lot of people and I teach for a living, is I let people know right off the bat. Hey, everybody, I want you to know I have a learning disability. I might be writing some things on this whiteboard or on this flip chart, and I might ask you how to spell them. I might ask you how to spell very simple things because I have a learning disability, and I want you to know that. But I also want you to know, because of my learning disability, that I'm a really good presenter, and I'm going to present things in a way that you will understand.
Mm. So
it's one of the gifts in my learning disability. But yeah, when shame hits me now, I speak to it.
Call it out, shine a light on it.
Well, I have to, because otherwise, I mean, I know that it'll cripple me.
Yeah.
I've been there enough times.
You know, I've had some examples of this recently. So outside of this, the podcast, it's interesting. People ask me what I do, and I always ask them work or play, which one are you more interested in? And if they say play, I go, well, let me tell you about the Mankind Project and the Mankind Podcast. And so this is a huge part of my life, but the work side is as a business coach and I've had to go through the full spectrum of story being a young guy. I've had one successful business, but not multiple. I don't have an MBA. I don't have a business degree. In fact, I dropped out. And as I got into this field, I was asking myself, well, who am I to stand in front of a bunch of C-suite executives to tell them about the blind spots I see in their business? And so I've had a great chance within my work to look at this question and ask these questions a lot, as well as call them out. Case in point, my team, I host a weekly meeting, and we have created a culture inside our firm around speaking to our vulnerability, speaking to the things that we're challenged by. In fact, right after our check-in, where we go through our wins, our shout-outs and hoorays, the great things we see other people do, we speak to our challenges. Here's the things I'm being challenged by right now. We don't call them struggles, we call them challenges. And it's amazing how through that vulnerable process of sharing, and since we started implementing these techniques inside the company, results phenomenal, because I now trust my team so much more, because guess what? They know my blind spots. I know theirs. Some of their blind spots are totally in my wheelhouse. Many of mine are in theirs. And now we have a support system and structure that can support each other in leading each other through these processes. That's just an example of kind of calling it out that I want to share that has dramatically changed my professional life. And guess what? When I'm going to pitch to that company in front of six C-suite executives as a 28-year-old man who kind of talks funny according to people here in the US, I have a team of 14 people that remind me on the day, you got this, Brandon. It's not why you, it's why not you. And it's completely changed my life.
Yeah. No, that's sweet. And thanks for sharing that. That's a lot of the tools that I lay out within organizations that I'm coaching. So.
Now let's speak to your coaching, because I recently attended your one of your leadership trainings, which I want you to talk about. Mate, I do a lot of self-help work. I've done all the Tony Robbins, Brendan Burchard's, Dean Graziosi's, so much of it. I don't want to sound arrogant in saying that. I just do a lot of those kinds of things. And recently, nothing's really been ringing the bell for me. And I'm telling you, your training that day, I have never been more emotionally and energetically exhausted than I have at the end of that training. And I've never had more notes in my book. Mm. It had such a dramatic impact on me. In fact, the whole reason this podcast has been launched when it has been and not been put off for another couple months is because I was able to identify how the story of I'm not worthy was contributing to us even launching this thing. And you helped me shine a light on that, which was phenomenal and amazing. So let's kind of go into the leadership training and how that relates to this podcast finally being out and being seen and heard.
Well, first off, thanks for the blessing, Brandon. I appreciate that. And the training that we used to call Understanding Your Leadership, we're changing the name now. It's the Blind Spots of Leadership, and we're changing the name for marketing purposes. But the reality is, yeah, we realized that there's three simple protocols we could put together and allow people to understand where their blind spots lie within leadership. And it starts with self-investigation, and the ahas, the epiphanies that participants get is understanding themselves better, but also understanding other humans and understanding why people do what they do. So as an entry level leadership training, and this is the funny part, is when people sign up, like, yeah, I'm taking a leadership training. And then they're like, whoa, wait, what are we doing? And they realize that as far as Leader Champions, my company goes, that leadership and personal growth work is all encompassing. So when you say you were really exhausted, emotionally exhausted, it's because you were doing the work.
Yeah.
And not everybody experiences it that way, but the more you do an inquiry into yourself and others and your leadership, yeah, of course, the more exhausting it can be.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, there were parts of the training that I didn't want to do, but when you explain the difference between willingness and wantingness, like in my head, I want to be seen as a guy who does leadership trainings on a Saturday, but am I willing to do it? Well, yes, yeah. We're able to tick that box. And then when we got in and did some of the exercises, things definitely I wanted to have, you know, notches on my belt, but willing, it was a different story. There was some growth there, some opportunities of vulnerability that I had to kind of lean into.
But that's like a deep, deep, honest evaluation of yourself. And that's just it, is when, so for the listener, there's these willingness questions that we ask. And what's great is people are like, yeah, yeah, you know, I'm willing. And I'm like, now hang on, because they want to. I mean, I want to be as honest as I can, but that doesn't mean that I'm always willing to be that honest.
Mm.
And so that's just one example I'll give so that the listeners can understand the difference between this wantingness and willingness. But
I mean, I want to be someone who openly speaks their truth, even in the most uncomfortable situations. Am I willing to all the time? No way.
Yeah. And one of the greatest questions we ask is, are you willing to see the opposite of your story as true? And then that's when people are like, wait, what?
I love that. Very, very Byron Katie kind of question there. I love that. Well, let's zoom out and get a bird's eye view of kind of how, you know, this podcast relates to that workshop. So plain and simple, I had this narrative running in my head. You know, to give context, there's a team of four of us who make this podcast a reality. All right, myself, Boyson Hodgson, Michael Russer, and Don Huff. I am the one spearheading and leading this initiative. And so with that responsibility as the leader of this initiative, it's my job to make sure that the things that need to get happen, that episodes get released, that interviews are booked. And when it came to getting this podcast ready to launch, we just kept putting it off, making things more complicated than they need to be. Next thing you know, we're doing crazy editing techniques in the audio and trying to get bigger guests before we launch. And it just, the list of things just started getting ridiculous. And it was right during the workshop that I disobeyed the rules of the workshop and I went away to Slack. And I posted in Slack to my podcast team, guys, I'm going to call myself out right now and take ownership for the fact that I have been allowing the story that I'm not worthy, which has contributed to people aren't going to like the podcast. I'm going to be seen as a fraud, that, you know, it needs to look perfect before it's launched. Who am I, 28-year-old, to be talking about manhood, masculinity, boyhood psychology? Who am I to be the host of this thing? We need to make it as pretty as possible so it looks good. All of that was spinning in my head and was causing me to make things far more complicated than they need to be. And by calling myself out to the team, who lovingly responded, "Finally." It's about time you saw that. It was launched the next week.
Awesome.
And it was able to be done. And it's been amazing to actually give it to people and not have it hiding away. Now I can actually help people. And it was through overcoming that story that was being fueled by this inherent belief of I'm not worthy that we're able to get those results.
Mm-hmm. Perfectionism. Yep.
Oh my gosh. I wanted to smack myself between the eyes when that happened. But now that I have that really poignant example, having been through your workshop and found that example, now the next time it turns up in another field, whether it's my relationship, whether it's, you know, with a client, I can better call it out, better take the power away from the story, as you said before.
Yeah. Yeah, the story is powerful. And yeah. So how to unpack it? How do you take the power away?
Mm. Well, mate, this has been awesome. We're just out of time, but I'm sure many of the listeners right now are thinking, all right, cool. Like, these are some pretty big ahas and takeaways, but putting it into application is a different story. And so tell us a little bit about your work as a leadership coach, about Leader Champions and how they can find out some more information. Because I'm sure that, like me, there's going to be many who want to continue this journey of leaning into the uncomfortable stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Brandon. So it's all available at leaderchampions.com. Go to leaderchampions.com and you can check out the trainings we have coming up and you can register. Or if you're an organization, group, company, corporation that would like some leadership coaching, please reach out. The difference with us, and I say us, Leader Champions, is we actually put this stuff into practice. That we're not going to just say, here's a tool, good luck, but here's a tool, how to use it. And if you don't practice it, you're not going to see the results you want. And so just like Brandon said, when he sits down with his team and they check in and they do these things, they're seeing the results because they're actually using the tools. And that's the difference between Leader Champions.
And here's the coolest thing. I'm speaking with a client here in Tennessee. And I, as I'm doing the kind of discovery call, getting to know them, I find out very quickly that the CEO is a huge fan of Brené Brown and has done a ton of workshops through her coaches. Number one, which makes my job a whole lot easier because I prefer to look at the leaders first before I look at the organization. But number two, they're saying, we would love to meet Mike. We would love to have this conversation. Oh, yeah, I haven't told you about this yet, Mike. So. But it was through applying it to my team. And now after informing my clients of how I run my internal meetings with my teams, our weekly check-ins, they now want to learn the process. They now want to implement the same. And so, yes, I mean, if this process, this could just be right now focused on your journey, your growth, for those of you listening, but the knock-on effect is just immense. And it's absolutely beautiful. And I hope after this time we've spent together, you guys have a better understanding of how the stories of I'm not worthy or I'm not good enough, how they come about and how they impact our lives. Mike, is there anything that you want to share for our guests before we finish up?
Yeah, practice, practice, practice. I mean, whatever it is that you want to become a reality, my whole thing is just keep practicing.
Mm. Practice doesn't make perfect, it makes progress.
Absolutely.
Awesome, mate. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Been great to be here.
Just before you go, Brandon here again, and I have Mike with us. It's been about 2 weeks since we recorded this episode, and Mike just checked in with me with some pretty cool ahas that he's been having on awareness around I'm not worthy, shame stuff. So, Mike, take it away, dude. Really cool stuff. Excited to hear about it.
Yeah. So worthiness. I thought I had my head wrapped around this. And then I was reading something on social media about this idea of extreme independence, which tapped into my trust issues, which I know I have trust issues. And when I was really wrapping my head around all of this, so just the basic idea of extreme independence is that I can do it alone. I got this. My life experience has taught me that I can't really count on people. But what's underneath that, what I realized about myself, the aha was, damn it, it's the trust about myself in, I learned that I don't necessarily trust myself to choose the right people to be in relationship with, that it comes back to me. And so I armor up, I'm ready to go to battle, blah, blah, blah. It's all a trauma response. But the good news is that if I look at this as a trauma response, then that awareness can allow it to be healed. If I hide, repress, or deny that there is trauma, then I can't heal it. So the beautiful thing and how this ties to worthiness, that's the key. That's how the trauma response can be healed, is to understand that I'm worthy of having support, that I'm worthy of true partnership, that I'm worthy of love, that I'm worthy to have a partner hold my heart, to cherish and adore me, that I'm worthy of all of that. And man, just wrapping my head around that, I just had to get a hold of you, let you know, hey, wait.
Dude, that is so cool, because you sharing that right now, you open yourself up to emotional risk, right? I mean, you were doing Brené Brown stuff before Brené Brown was cool. Like, you know, you've been involved with her work and shame resilience for so long. And it's so natural for people in a position of authority that teach on topics. I mean, you've been teaching on this stuff for decades now. It's very natural to want to kind of protect the image, protect the message. Like, well, if I'm the authority, then I've got this stuff buttoned up, signed, sealed, delivered, end of question, I'm the man. And what I love about you getting in touch with me to communicate that stuff is and what I admire about you, Mike, and a lot of men that I believe we associate with in this work, is this openness and acceptance of the journey doesn't end. It never ends. There's always opportunity to learn. There's new lessons around every corner if we choose to look at it. And the fact that you shared this new awareness, that this continued development of your understanding of how your unworthy narrative turns up, beautiful. It gives me the permission to keep up that work as well. It gives me permission to keep doing the inquisition into myself. So, man, kudos to you, dude. Thank you for sharing. I'm happy we could jump on and record this, because it's powerful work to understand that regardless of the status, the experience, or the roads that we've already walked, the road keeps going. The journey keeps going. Self-work never ends.
That's right. Never ends. And it was a timely aha. So I had to share it with you.
Rock on, man. Rock on. Appreciate you sharing that. And now, you listeners, now you can get on to whatever it is that you're doing. See you guys soon. Bye.
This has been the Mankind Podcast, produced in association with the Mankind Project USA. I have been your host, Brandon Clift, and I personally want to thank our guests for joining us today and imparting their wisdom from their experiences in this amazing journey called life. And of course, I want to thank you, the listener, because through your attention and your support, you make it a heck of a lot easier for us to let men out there in the world know that they are not alone and that there is more than one way to be a man. Special thanks, of course, goes to my incredible team, Marketing and Communications Director Boyson Hodgson, producer and editor of this episode, Michael Russo, who makes me sound so much more intelligent than I actually am. So, of course, special kudos goes there. And if you've been enjoying the music throughout this episode and all of our episodes, check out Jim Donovan and the Sun King Warriors. I have links to them in the show notes. Now, the fee for this episode is simple. If you found gold and insights that you believe could benefit your loved ones and those you care about, be sure to share it with them. And of course, remember that life doesn't happen to us, it happens for us, so long as we rip the pen out of fate's hand and become the author of our own story. So my friend, pick up the pen, and we'll see you next week.
Lots of love.